Welcome to the Pop Culture Pod Podcast. Now let's begin.
Hello, fellow podcast listener, and welcome to the Pop Culture Pub Podcast. I'm your host this week. My name is Chris Lockhart, and I am joined by my co-host in crime, Mr. Kevin Decent. How's it going, Kevin?
Oh, it's going all right. Chris, like we were talking about off air, I am just waiting for a little bit of warmer weather, but I kind of feel like everyone's waiting for that, too.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I guess I can't complain. It could be a lot colder here, but... Yeah, spring can't come fast enough. I know I'm tired of winter, especially being in lockdown. It just makes it worse. You know, like the lockdown this like last summer wasn't that bad because you could still go out in your yard and you know, just chill in the yard. Like, you know, it's just I hate being stuck in my house all the time. But hopefully, you know, this time next year this will be a thing of the past. We'll be past all this COVID stuff.
I hope so.
Yeah, me too. So for this episode, we're going to do things just a little bit differently because we're waiting for our co-host, Ragnar. We're not exactly sure where he is right now. So we're going to start with our brain candy segment, then our Ender segment, and then we're going to get into tonight's topic. Hopefully by then Ragnar will have joined us. All right. So let us start off with our brain candy segment. And this segment is things that we've been watching, reading, listening, and we'll make it a pick or a pan, possibly. Kevin, do you have anything for brain candy this week?
All right, so I will have a review coming up here shortly on my own site. But I got to read G.I. Joe World on Fire graphic novel.
Okay.
Oh, man, it's good. So the idea is that Cobra was a military contractor,
mm-hmm.
and kind of like a Halliburton thing, and just provided weapons for armies across the world. And one of the weapons they provided were the BATs, the Battle Android Troopers, which were embedded with a code that Cobra could turn on and have all of these BATs turn against their home governments and take over the world pretty much instantly.
Yeah.
So you need G.I. Joe, though. Well, G.I. Joe, the army's been dismantled because they didn't need an army anymore. Everyone had these BATs. So G.I. Joe instead is just normal people doing like guerrilla warfare style battles in cities to try to take back their cities from Cobra.
Hmm.
So, like, there's a couple military, like Duke's in there, he's military, Hawk, Scarlet, but otherwise, they're just training new people. Like, Roadblock is legit a chef, which was his side deal in the original comics and the cartoon.
Yep.
He's a chef that's just like, this is wrong. Rock and Roll was just a dude out surfing that saw a fight and wanted to help. Like, they're just common people trying to do what they can. And because they're common people, they fail. And this is a huge organization they're trying to go against. And people die. And stuff happens. And all. It's fantastic. And it's definitely like its own closed world. They're just taking, you know, some of the more popular characters we all know.
Okay.
Using a couple new ones for, you know, you need an introductory character for it. So there's a couple new ones. But it doesn't rely on having read all the Larry Hama ones or remembering everything from the cartoons. It's just like... if you have a baseline of G.I. Joe, here's this more adult, honestly, retelling of the story. Hmm. So good. I was very impressed by it.
That's awesome. So this is from IDW, I'm expecting. Yep. I'm suspect. Okay. So like who's on the Cobra side of things? Like who's all there for Cobra?
Cobra is on there, Baroness is on there, Major Blood is such a good character in it. Steals the show.
Yeah.
Incredible. The Dreadnoks are in it. Kind of a different take on them that was actually very cool. And then random, you know, random troopers and stuff like that. And a lot of it is, it almost humanizes stuff for Cobra to a point, and then you get past that point and, you know, realize it. But like a lot of good stories for villain, you can kind of see what they're doing up to a certain point.
Mm-hmm.
And it, you know, and it's totally the, hey, we got the trains to run on time and we got food for people and everyone has a job.
Yeah.
Yes, but if anyone fails at any of these things, they're shot in the street. That's, you know, kind of not a good thing.
Yeah. Huh. So no Destro?
He's in it briefly.
Okay. And what about Zartan?
Along with the Dreadnoks. Yep.
He is there with them? Okay.
It is such a different take on what the Dreadnoks are. And honestly, I would read a whole series on that version of the Dreadnoks. Like if they review this little pocket universe idea of G.I. Joe and it was just the Zartan and the Dreadnoks story for within this world, I'd buy it instantly. I was very impressed with their spin on the idea of the Dreadnoks and Zartan.
Awesome. Yeah, because that's one thing about G.I. Joe that I love is it's not so much the heroes, actually the villains. I you know, to me they're just as interesting and sometimes even more interesting than the heroes.
Oh, Dr. Mindbender is in it as well.
Oh, excellent. And you say Major Blood plays like a...
Major Blood steals the show.
That's awesome. I liked him.
Yeah, if you don't realize what he's doing until he does it, and oh, I went nuts. I thought, how did I not realize what was going on?
Excellent. And Tolmax and Zamot, are they in it?
No.
No?
No, but there's a comic coming out this week.
Yeah.
That I think is just a reprint with a different cover. I don't think it's a new story. But when I go to my shop, if it's there, or maybe even like if there's a Comixology preview, I want to look. If it's just a reprint, I'm not getting it. If it's more of this world, then I'm probably going to grab it.
Okay. And it's just a graphic novel? Like has it came out yet? Like on its own?
Yep.
Oh, okay.
Yep, and it was six or seven single issues when it came out. And I didn't pick it up then. It looked interesting. It said, you know, a world in which Cobra has won and, you know, there are little guerrilla gangs trying to, you know, take the world back from Cobra. I was like, well, it sounds interesting, but I still thought it was kind of going to be cartoony. Like, what is it? Welcome to Springfield, I think, something like that. That's the classic G.I. Joe episode. Yep. Where the Joes end up with Cobra. I thought it was going to be something like that. Nope. I mean, it is that idea, but taken to a 10th degree level, and it's definitely an adult story for it, too.
Hmm. Interesting. Interesting. Oh, that's awesome. All right. So, for me, I read a graphic novel that was, I want to say, a six-issue miniseries. FF, The Books of Doom by Ed Brubaker.
Okay.
I love me some Dr. Doom, and this is basically his origin story, and basically told in a modern setting, right? In a modern context. And it was awesome. Like, Ed Brubaker, I mean, pretty much everything he does is awesome, but... And this came out, I want to say, in the mid-2000s, like 2008, somewhere around there. But I've never read it before. But, you know, they had a sale on Comixology. I figured $5, I'll check it out. And, yeah, I'm so glad I did. It was awesome. Yeah, basically, Doom's, you know... Basically, I don't want to reveal too much. But he's basically telling his life story to someone who's going to be writing his biography, not autobiography, but biography, about how he, you know, rose up, you know, in Latveria, you know, from being like a poor, you know, peasant, gypsy, essentially, to basically becoming its, you know, ruler. And, you know, his early dealings with Reed Richards and Ben Grimm. But yeah, Reed Richards and Ben Grimm, like, they're maybe 3 or 4 pages through the whole miniseries. And not as the FF, like, the FF don't come into it at all. It's just Dr. Doom and his rise to power. So, yeah, it's really good. I highly recommend it.
Did you see the story that they're going to do the wedding of Dr. Doom coming up in the FF comics?
No, I didn't.
May or June, maybe. May, and they were keeping it secret who it's going to be.
Who he's going to be marrying?
Yeah.
Interesting. I wonder who that could be.
I'm debating picking it. I'm going through, I'm making my May list right now, and it's getting out of hand already, so I need to edit it, but that FF book is on it for now.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been enjoying FF by Dan Slott. He's been doing really good with the FF. Another thing I wanted to mention on Brain Candy was the new series on the CW, Superman and Lois.
How is it?
It's actually not bad. I've only seen the pilot episode. I must say I have episode 2 and 3 on my PVR. I haven't watched them yet. But I really enjoyed it. You know, is it the Superman story that I wish they would tell? No. Because if you're going to go with, you know, like Superman as Clark Kent and all that, I want to see them in Metropolis. I want to see Clark Kent investigating things. I want to see more street level villains and heroes, in Metropolis. That's kind of what I want to see. But what they're doing on the CW, and because it is the CW, is they're doing, you know, where Clark basically loses his job, and then his mom dies, and his dad's already dead. So they move back to the farm, because they have 2 boys. And one of them is dealing with, like, depression and stuff like that. And so they move back to Smallville, where they're going, like, the boys are going to go to school there. And Lois is, I guess, just going to work from home and, you know, do the commute, I guess, to Metropolis. And, of course, Superman can be anywhere. Like, I mean, you know, he's not tied down to, you know, being stuck in Smallville. But this is where the series is going to be based primarily. And, you know, I understand why the CW is doing that approach. Like, you know, having teenage boys, you know, they're going for that CW demographic, and then also, you know, having it centered in Smallville, you know, they can do most, you know, they're filming at the farm, you know, so you don't need to hire a bunch of extras, you don't need to close down streets and wherever they're filming to film scenes. So I know that's why they're telling this story the way they are, you know, for logistics, for, you know, budgetary reasons, but it's not bad. I actually didn't mind it. But like I said, I haven't seen episode 2 and 3, and then episode 4 will be this week. But just based on the pilot, I am going to stick with it for now. And I really like that. His name's Tyler something. Tyler. I can't remember. The guy who plays Superman. He's actually really good. I find he's really good. And Lois, she's okay. I don't mind her. She's a pretty good actress. And then we have not Lex Luthor, but there is, like, this guy from the future or something, and his name's Luthor, and he's fighting Superman, and he's wearing, like, Lex Luthor, you know, Iron Man suit. So I don't know exactly what's going on there.
Now, how tightly did it tie into any Arrowverse things before, or so far does it stand alone?
I think it's standing on its own for now. But from what I understand, because this Superman is the Superman from the Supergirl world, but the Crisis on Infinite Earths that they did as a crossover last year, I think, merged all the Earths into one.
Yeah.
So, like, Arrow and all them, they are on this Earth. So, you know, I'm assuming we're going to see, well, whatchamacallit, Stephen Amell's Green Arrow's dead now. Spoilers. But, you know, Supergirl's still there. Flash is still there. And, like, at the end of Crisis, they you know, hinted that they were, you know, forming the Justice League in this world. So I don't know if that's going to play into this series at all. Because they, you know, like, they met at the Hall of Justice at the end of that crossover. So, I don't know. Like I said, I've only seen the first episode, but just based on that, it's not bad. I don't mind it. So I'm going to stick with it for the time being anyway. Now, the next show I wanted to talk about, I was hoping Ragnar would be here, but unfortunately he's still not here yet. And that's WandaVision. Have you watched WandaVision yet, Kev?
I have watched it all. I work in the mornings and, you know, into like early afternoon, Monday through Friday. So Fridays became my no internet day.
Okay.
And everyone knew it because I did not want anything spoiled for me for it. When it started, I wasn't worried about it. You know, they dropped the first two episodes at once. And I think it wasn't until episode three was up that we actually sat down to watch it. And from there, I said, that's it. I don't want this ruined. I'll probably be doing the same thing coming up with Falcon Winter Soldier.
Yep.
But yeah, Friday is my no internet day. No Facebook, no Twitter, no nothing. I do not want it ruined.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I you know, like, and it's, some people are throwing some shade at it, but man, yeah. I like that they did something different, you know. This show has just grown the character of Wanda Maximoff exponentially. And definitely set her up good for the next Doctor Strange movie, which she's going to be in. And, you know, spoilers, you know, Vision is back, like, in a different form, but he's back. You know, we got the White Vision, which I honestly was not expecting. I did not see that coming until I saw that post-credits scene. I was like, oh, shit, this is awesome. And then, yeah, when he tries crushing her head, I was just, you know, like, I don't know. I love that era of the Avengers, like when you had the White Vision.
The John Byrne West Coast Avengers run.
Yeah.
So good.
Yeah.
So good.
Yeah, I'm really, like, they had that on sale in Comixology, and I didn't pick it up. I'm really kicking myself. Now I'll have to wait. But yeah, no, it was awesome. Did everything pan out as I had hoped? No. I really wish they would have done a little bit more with these episodes, but I understand, like, the thing is this, while they were filming this, the pandemic hit. So I guess, like, in the last episode, there was things that they didn't film that they had planned. Just because they couldn't. And I think they had to streamline some things. But I'm fine with that. You know, what do I wish, you know, that would have been, Quicksilver from the X-Men universe? Absolutely. I think that would have been amazing if somehow, Agnes had plucked him out of the multiverse. You know, like, I really thought that's where we were going with this. With the next Doctor Strange film, you know, being called The Multiverse of Madness. So, but I mean, whatever. it, you know, you can't get everything you want, right? I mean, I wanted Mephisto to show up, but he didn't.
I mean, they didn't bait and switch us for any of it. For Mephisto, for mutants, for anything. It was what we as viewers with a week in between episodes started guessing.
Yes, exactly. Yep.
So they didn't trick us. They didn't do anything. That's our own fault. And yep. They don't owe anyone anything for, well, you didn't do this. Okay, I never told you I was going to do that.
Yeah.
Like, I can't be mad at my wife tonight saying you didn't bring me home a pizza. She didn't offer to bring me home a pizza. I didn't ask for a pizza.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I can't be mad at her for it.
Yeah.
You know, so... Yes, it was, but it was exciting to play along, and that I'm looking forward to doing that with Falcon Winter Soldier. Like, there are comics that shot up in price because people thought maybe this character is going to appear, and then they didn't. But it was part of the fun of waiting weekly. If they dumped this all at once, I don't think I would have had as much fun. I enjoyed playing with the mystery of it all.
Yeah, exactly.
And there were still moments, though, that I went, oh, my gosh. Oh, gee. Oh, no. And then, like, there was one moment I'm hitting my wife's leg while we're sitting on the couch going, oh, my gosh. It's going nuts for it.
And, like, yeah, the Agatha reveal. Like, I
so thought, good.
Yeah. And it's funny, like, the one podcast I was listening to, I listened to the Comic Conspiracy podcast. I highly recommend it. It's a great podcast. One second here. Kev, give us some more thoughts here. I just got Ragnar here. I'm just messaging him if you just want to carry the conversation.
Part of the... I think it was a good way to get new fans into it. If you were enjoying it, you could just sit down and watch it. You didn't necessarily have to know everything going on in all of the previous 20 Marvel movies, plus because of certain things that happened in the X-Men movies as well. You could have just enjoyed it as, first there's the sitcom hook of this is kind of funny seeing these two characters pretending to be in sitcoms going back to 50s, 60s, you know, doing one for every decade there. The whole story is a PTSD and her going through all of the stages of grief and each episode or two episodes is another stage in all of those steps. But if you have watched all of it, you're enjoying it on this other level too.
Yep.
When her she recast Pietro. Oh my God.
Yep.
I'm so glad that wasn't ruined for me. So glad. Yep. It was amazing. Agatha is such a cool character. I'm mad that I missed out on apparently the Ultimate Fantastic Four version is the one they're basing
this look off
of. She's a younger one than the one we might remember from like West Coast Avengers and classic Fantastic Four. So they have a newer one that's gone. I just want it now. I just want to have it in collection. I think that Jimmy Woo's witness protection was Pietro.
Yep. Ralph Boner.
I absolutely think that. Yep.
Yep.
Kat Dennings is fantastic. She was just amusing and fun and added a great bit to it. Agnes, of course, is amazing.
Yep.
On it throughout. And then the little things that they did. Now, because there's stuff where I was thinking, well, how is your general public going to know what this is for certain things, like runes? And then I was like, well, Supernatural just ended 15 years.
Yep.
And then a lot of people watch that. So some of this, I think, is in the public knowledge now that it would work.
Yep. Yep, absolutely. Catherine Hahn, I've really come to like that actress. Like based on WandaVision. And she did a miniseries for HBO in 2019 called Mrs. Fletcher, which I hadn't watched, but based on her performance on WandaVision, I went and binged it. It's 6 episodes, and you actually get to see her naked in it. So if you want to see her naked, you can watch that. Man, was she good in that. And not just because she was naked. But, I don't know. Like, she's one of those actresses that I've seen her on things. Like, I remember her from Step Brothers. I've never watched Bad Moms, but I know she's on those movies. But yeah, she was just amazing in WandaVision. And like I said, like I had to go watch that Mrs. Fletcher just based on her performance here, you know, like, and she's fantastic. So yeah, I can't say enough great things about not just Catherine Hahn, but yeah, the rest of the cast, like you were saying, like Jimmy, you know, FBI Jimmy agent, Woo. Jimmy yep. Woo, Kat Denning, and Paul, and I got, and kudos to Elizabeth Olsen, man, she, she did a phenomenal job on this show. Like, if she doesn't get an Emmy, or at least a nod for an Emmy, that's a crime, I think.
At least a nomination. Yeah. At least. I would put Paul Bettany up for nomination. I would put Catherine Hahn up for nomination. I forget who played Monica, but I'd be willing to put her up for a Best Supporting as well.
Yeah, and I'm glad that we're going to see more of her, because apparently she's going to be in the Ms. Marvel show, as well as Captain Marvel 2.
Yep. So, and she's the, again, talk about a character that's been in the quarter bin forever.
Yep.
And I don't, like, this is a cool version of a character. There's some of this stuff where I'm like, this is just a dumb looking costume with the wrist connecting into a cape, but not a cape thing going on there.
Yep. Well, and like I think I mentioned on a previous podcast, that actress, she was actually on Mad Men, and she played Don Draper's secretary in the last couple seasons, two or three seasons of Mad Men. And I didn't realize she was so young, because in Mad Men, you know, like, she plays a 60s part, right? So her hair's done a certain way. I don't know, like, in Mad Men, it just seemed like people are older than they actually are on that show. And I think it's just because it's that generation. You know, like, because they're the 60s generation, so they always wore dresses and shoes and always had to make sure their hair was done in a certain way, and men always wore suits and ties, and, you know, like, and I'm used to, like, going to Walmart and seeing chicks in pajama bottoms, you know what I mean? So, like, I didn't realize she was so young, and it's the same actress, and I was just, my mind was blown. I'm like, wow, like, and I mean, Mad Men, oh man, that show's been over for like 6 years now, I want to say.
Well, that's what I was going to say. As young as she looks young here on WandaVision, so yeah, 6-7 years if you count, you know, when they actually filmed it.
Yeah.
She must have looked even younger.
Yep. But I mean, like on Mad Men, like John Hamm, like he was like, I always thought of him like as a father type figure, even though John Hamm's like only, I think, like 5 or 6 years older than me. But again, it's like, because it's a show set in the 60s, that's just, you know, I don't know. People seem younger now, I guess, in real life. I don't
or,
know.
What, or are we getting older?
Yeah. Yeah. That too. So yeah. Okay. So I got a message from Ragnar. Unfortunately, he's not going to be able to be with us this evening, because his mom showed up for a visit and he forgot about the podcast, which is, there's nothing wrong with that. Like, that's cool. Because I know his mom lives in a different city, so for her to make the trip, that's, you know, it's not easy. So I just want to throw it out there that, like, Ragnar and I, at some point, we're going to, because he, like I said, he had a lot of thoughts on our topic for this evening. So he wants to have his say. So we will do a supplemental episode to this episode where Ragnar will discuss his thoughts on our topic. So anyway, before we get to that topic, Kevin, did you have anything for the Ender segment? Any news you want to throw out there?
For people who listen to this show and don't listen to the other podcasts, we're currently trying to figure out what our streaming plans will be, because on my other podcast, The House Show, we review classic wrestling stuff.
Yep.
And WWE Network announced that they go away in the United States on April 4th, and starting March 18th, all of their content is going over to Peacock, the NBC streaming service.
Oh.
So it's kind of cool, though. They said you get everything for $5 and WWE Network was $10. All right. Already saving some money. They got a sign-up deal for a couple months, even cheaper. But then they said, we're going to on March 18th, we'll have all the pay-per-views. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
We will have the pay-per-view for March. We'll be on there live. And then when WrestleMania hits, WWE Network will be shut down, and the only place to watch WrestleMania live will be on Peacock.
Hmm.
However, we've been watching the classic 80s show, Saturday Night's Main Event.
Yeah.
Which is not listed for when they're bringing it over.
Oh.
All they said is by the end of August, everything will be moved over there.
Oh.
So us and a lot of other people that are going through all this classic content for blogs, podcasts, articles, whatever, might not have it for a little while.
Well, and I wonder how that's going to affect Canada. Like, I don't subscribe to it, but I know it is, like, the WWE Network is available up here, but I don't, as far as I know, Peacock isn't.
And that's what it is. They're going to keep WWE Network for anything that doesn't have Peacock. And so far, I think Peacock's just U.S.
Oh, okay.
But if all of a sudden you got Peacock, then they would get rid of WWE.
Okay, which might have, because I know we have, CBS All Access, but now it's changing to Paramount
Plus. Yeah.
I think we're getting that up here, but I think CBS All Access still had some deals with, like, Crave and stuff up here, so I don't know. It's weird.
Well, and that's a lot of them. It's, hey, we're starting this new service, but we don't have everything yet because of previous deals, but as soon as those deals are over, we'll have those as well.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the big rumor is that Charlie Cox, Daredevil, filmed a bunch of scenes for Spider-Man 3.
Yep.
Because that Netflix deal is done, but they don't want to say anything yet.
Oh, I hope so. I want that show to come back in the worst way. I love that Daredevil show. And Charlie Cox is perfect as Matt Murdock.
He's great for it. That whole show was fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a great actor. Yeah, well, that sucks with both the WWE. but I guess good for Canada that we still get it for now.
Yeah. We'll wait to see how it turns out.
But yeah, $5 a month, that's pretty cheap. It's pretty good.
Oh, I mean, considering when I first started ordering pay-per-views, they were $30, and that's 3 hours, and mm-hmm. you get it once. Maybe you get the replay that night, but then that's it. Or for $5, I could watch all of them live, everything that came beforehand, all the companies they bought out. Like, as a kid, I would have immediately gone to my mom and said, like, I will give you money now. Let's sign up for this for $5 a month.
Oh, yeah. Well, and yeah, like 20 years ago, I was like, when I was watching WWE, I was paying like $35 for regular pay-per-views.
Yeah. Which might not even be that good.
Yeah. And then, $50 for WrestleMania.
I forgot WrestleMania was more, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I like, did it.
But. Yeah. Like, yeah, no, that's a hell of a deal. Like I know up in Canada, I watch Coronation Street. It's a British soap opera that my wife and I watch. And we watch it on CBC. So CBC has a streaming service called CBC Gem. But you watch it, and you can watch anything on there for free, but it comes with commercials. And I don't know if it's the algorithm that they use or what it is, but like a lot of times when you watch their shows online, they repeat the same commercial, like literally four times in a row.
I can't stand those. We got a few apps that do that.
Yeah.
Once you see it, you can't unsee it.
Yeah, exactly. So, but they offered, the premium service, no commercials, for $5 a month. So I figured, screw it, I'm going to try it. And man, I'm kicking myself for not doing this sooner. It's only $5 a month. Just a single issue comic book is almost $5.
Yeah.
And yet, I have no problem spending, $30 or $40 a week on comic books. But $5 a month, I was like, for whatever reason, I was like, no, that's too much. But I did it. And man, am I thankful. I don't even, because I used to PVR Coronation Street, I don't even do that anymore because it's so much better watching it on the app now. But with that being said, I did subscribe to Major League Baseball. that app, which in Canada is like $32 a month, which is a lot. But
If you're watching all the stuff, you get your money's worth.
Yeah, there's a lot of content on there. And I don't know. I don't know what it is. This year I've just been missing baseball. Like, I don't know what it is. And for whatever reason, up in Canada, like, because I'm a Blue Jays fan. And I know it's just spring training, but it just seems to me like up in Canada, Sportsnet, because they're owned by Rogers, which also owns the Blue Jays, that they would have, like, spring training games. I think they only have, like, one a week. And I'm like, what? Like, this sucks. I'm also a Cubs fan, too, so... and apparently they're not on WGN anymore.
Really? Oh, yeah. WGN's changing it. Yeah, they're changing what they are. I forget. Yeah, I saw something about it. They're not going to be a superstation, really, anymore.
No? Okay. They're doing
something else. Yeah, let me...
Because I remember back in the day, they were talking like WGN was going to like move to like making original content.
They're going to become a news channel.
Oh, okay. So that's what it is.
Yeah.
So I guess the original content thing obviously didn't take. But yeah, no, after I forget how many years, like 50 or 60 years of being on WGN, the Cubs aren't going to be. And like I was paying extra for that. Like, because like I said, I'm a Cubs fan. So I would pay whatever it is on my satellite bill, $5 a month or whatever, to get WGN. But now I don't need to do that, so I guess I should cancel that. Because I don't watch WGN for anything else. So we'll see. It's like I said, I don't know. I've just been craving baseball lately. But yeah, anyway. So we can move on from our ender segment to our main topic. And that is, let's remake the sequels. Now, there's rumors. I know it's probably, you know, that's just what that is, just a rumor that, you know, Disney wants to remake the sequels. I don't think that'll ever happen. I think
no,
it's done. You know, that being said, you know, for podcasting purposes, we're going to remake the sequels and, you know, just kind of throw our two cents in on what we would like to have seen with episode 7, 8, 9. But before we get into that, let's talk about what didn't work. So Kevin, for you with the sequel trilogy, what didn't work? Like what are some of your biggest problems with it?
Changing course with your directors, your writers,
mm-hmm.
really, they should have done a showrunner format like TV yes. does. And so you have 7 come out, tells one story. You have 8 come out, deciding to go a completely different direction. And then you have 9 trying to piece the two together into its own thing.
Yep.
If you had one voice straight through, it would have saved a lot and solved mm-hmm. a lot of the problems. Even if we had issues with things, it at least would have still been one person's vision for it.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, there would have been stuff that didn't land, that we'd nitpick, that whatever, but it at least would have been one voice, I'll say, that got it there. But now it's, I don't know what's going on. We were going to the left, and then we went all the way to the right, and now we're trying to come back to the left where we were. But we can't ignore that we are already over here, though.
Yeah.
And just, I understand. Well, no, I mean, I don't understand why it happened. Like, it shouldn't have happened. But I know why it happened, I guess is a better way to put it. Like, yeah, you know, back behind the camera stories and everything.
Yep.
But it just, and even if 9 had the same voice as 8 did, that could have been better.
Yep.
Like, okay, we're still going this way, but to just jostle the fans back and forth, it makes no sense. And it hurts, and then we're stuck trying to create headcanon out of it to make it all work.
Yep.
Honestly, you know what? They don't have to refilm anything. They don't have to reboot. If they want to take everything from 7, 8, and 9, dump every bit of footage they have on the floor and put it back together, probably could make a better storyline.
Yeah. I the only thing I would suggest if they wanted to do that approach is film some more with Mark Hamill and Daisy Ridley and actually have him training her, like, properly as a Jedi.
Well, like, isn't there a big cut of the Godfather movies that someone puts that all together into one long movie?
Yep.
So the story is more linear. Like, do that. Take the three movies, chop it all up, make the story make more sense. And it probably could.
With just a few tweaks here and there. Like,
yeah.
But yeah, for sure. Yeah, for me, obviously what didn't work is like what you said, Kevin, that, you know, like, the, like when they first announced this, they said this is episode 7 and this is a trilogy. Which means, you know, they should have planned it as a trilogy, and they didn't. They, you know, like, J.J. Abrams came on, he's only going to do one movie. Then get rid of him. Like, if he's only willing to do one movie, find someone willing to do three movies.
Or have someone that is over him, like Kevin Feige.
Which Kathleen Kennedy kind of was, but she's clearly not a Star Wars fan. And that's another problem.
Or got pushed around too much.
Or she pushed people around too much. Because that's true. That's kind of some of the behind the scenes thing is like she was really pushing some of her own agendas, which are, you know, whatever. I mean, you're in that position, okay. But you also have to approach it from, you know, you want to make your fans happy because they're the ones that are paying for this at the end of the day. You know, If these movies don't turn a profit, you know, Disney's going to step in, right? Like,
well, turn a profit, I don't even know, because between you're going to make it, you're going to do all the merchandising, you're going to sell it to foreign markets, you're going to sell it to streaming services, well, not now, because Disney Plus, TV rights eventually and all, like, you've made a profit, and not just a profit, millions if not billions, before a single person actually sees the movie.
Yep.
From all of that. So it doesn't have to actually be good or make money. They've already made their money.
Which is...
And they don't care.
Yeah, which is what ultimately happened. You know, but they, in the end, they just alienated their fans, you know, as a result, unfortunately. Like, yeah, so, yeah, they definitely needed somebody who knew the material or was willing to learn the material, like Kevin Feige. Like, I don't think I think Kevin Feige's a Marvel guy, but I don't think he knows absolutely everything about Marvel, but he's willing to learn, he's willing to listen, he's willing to, you know, adapt. And I don't think Kathleen Kennedy's like that, from what I've heard. I could be wrong, but...
Well, I mean, I was listening to a different podcast and was saying for WandaVision, clearly there's stuff from West Coast Avengers, the Vision and Scarlet Witch limited series.
Yeah.
And then they're saying that he had the Vision limited series from Tom King on his desk that Kevin Feige did.
Yeah.
And just cherry picking aspects from here and there. And that's the thing. As long as you get the essence of a character right, I don't care how many decades worth of stories you cherry pick from to give me a good movie story, because it's two different formats.
Exactly. Format. Yeah.
So Wanda has to, okay, what's her deal? Wanda and Vision are in love. He's a robot, but he's becoming a human. She's a witch, but she's kind of screwy and has gone through some personal trauma there. Sometimes she can't really control her powers because she's had so much bad things happen to her. She goes off the deep end sometimes. Go.
Yep.
All right, I don't need to show my West Coast Avengers stuff. I don't need them to show up on that team of Avengers during their honeymoon. I don't need the Master Pandemonium story. It was cool. I loved it in the comics, but I don't need that. Mm-hmm. I don't need Swordsman and Mantis in the background while they're getting married as well. I don't need it to be word for a comics. Just give me the essence, and you gave me a good show.
Yep.
But so Star Wars with it, part of it is give me a handful of characters, give me some connection to what came beforehand, and otherwise you can create all new characters that have no backstory, that have nothing going on, that are clean slates.
Yep.
And they still, for a lot of them, screwed that up. Or, here's this awesome new character. What are you going to do with them? Nothing. Just looks cool.
Well,
okay.
Yeah.
Well, then why did I invest my time into it?
Exactly. So getting to episode 8 with Rian Johnson, you know, it's like he went out of his way to defy expectations. Like, you know, like he was like totally against fan service. So like Luke Skywalker had to be a dick. He had to like throw his lightsaber away. He had to do almost the opposite of what we were expecting. And I hated that. You know, I know people say, well, you can't rely on fan service, you know, but yeah, you should pay a little bit of fan service since it's the fans that made this possible.
Yeah, you can't give fans everything that want. You need to tell your own story. But you have people who have invested 40 years at this point in it. And yes, Star Wars, if you watch the original ones as an adult with fresh eyes, never seen it before, you can pick the hell out of them. There's stuff that's hokey. There's stuff that doesn't make sense. There's stuff that's goofy. Yes, of course. But kids loved it. Kids loved 1, 2, and 3.
Mm-hmm.
And those kids are now, you know, in their 20s.
Yep.
Late 20s and all. And have the nostalgia for those like we had. I didn't see kids going nuts for this. Like, my kid, his peers and all do not care about this trilogy of Star Wars and all. So you didn't do justice for the people that are adults that have invested all this time into it, and you didn't make the kids brand new fans of it. If I'm... Okay, I'll tell you what. So my kid is curious about Baby Yoda, R2-D2 and 3PO, and Jar Jar Binks. Those are your gateways to get kids into it.
Yep.
Who's your gateway for 7, 8, and 9? The little styrofoam cup droid? I can't think of its name right now.
Oh, yeah. I can't remember.
It's a cool... Oh, sorry. No, BB-8.
Yeah, they had BB-8. Yep.
That's their attempt, and okay, it's cool, but then he doesn't tie the story together like 3PO and R2 did.
Yeah. Well, they tried with BB-8, but there's so much that they should have done better. Like, yeah, they needed a showrunner. They needed. I almost suspect part of it was like the original trilogy going back to the '70s. You know, people got to realize George Lucas took a big gamble, you know, in a lot of ways, like with his merchandising rights, with, you know, making the original Star Wars. And then when he went into Empire Strikes Back, like, he basically funded it all on his own. Like, he almost went bankrupt to make that movie because nobody, you know, despite the success of Star Wars, the original Star Wars, people still weren't 100% behind, you know, studio-wise, putting a bunch of money out. So George Lucas did that. And again, like he held on to merchandising rights. He held on to the rights to Star Wars. Like, I think that what it was 20th Century Fox basically said, yeah, we'll hand us the rights and we'll fund your movie. And he was like, no, I'm not going to do that. I'll let you distribute it. And I'd like you to help me fund it and I'll pay you back. But, and they're like, no. So he had to put out his own money and stuff. So he kind of made it up as he went, and it worked. For the most part, like you said, there's some hokey stuff in the original trilogy. Whereas the prequels, like, he had a plan. Like, this, you know, was in total control. He didn't have to, you know, beg and plead and whatever. And he was able to direct all three movies by himself, which is what he wanted to do with the original stuff, the original trilogy, but he could only direct the original one because he was so busy behind the scenes trying to get everything going that he couldn't actually direct it, direct Empire or Return. So I'm thinking somebody looked at that and was like, well, you know, like, what made the original trilogy work was that George made it up as he went along, and let's try that. And it didn't work. Because George Lucas made it work because he had so much at stake. J.J. Abrams had nothing at stake. Kathleen Kennedy had nothing at stake. So, you know, hit or miss, you know, they were just banking that, you know, people are gonna go to it, irregardless. Which is kind of what happened, but...
That's an interesting idea, though, of someone that has the risk involved, too. The risk of failure there, and that pushes them to create a better content. So in that respect, maybe Rogue One succeeds because it's the first spin-off movie, and they were risking a lot doing that. Mandalorian succeeds because it's the first on Disney Plus, its first live action TV show, so they were risking a lot. Even like Clone Wars or Rebels, because of what they were. But whereas 7, 8, 9, they are kind of cushioned and protected in a way.
Yes.
So the risk isn't as high.
Yeah, exactly. Because I mean, like, they know fans like you and I, like when we heard that they were making Episode 7, we were so excited. We knew we were going to go irregardless.
Oh, yeah. They knew they had our money either way. It didn't have to be good.
Yeah. Whereas when you get to Episode 9, by the time we got to Episode 9, I've only ever...
I didn't see it in theater.
I only saw it in the theater. I haven't seen it since. And it's on Disney Plus. And I still can't bring myself to rewatch it.
No, if I'm going to... I'll rewatch 4, 5, and 6 any day of the week.
Mm-hmm.
I want to do Mandalorian again and just see stuff that I missed the first time. I'll watch Rogue One whenever. 1, 2, and 3, I've like played with over the years. Like, I like it a little better every time.
Yep.
Granted, it's taken like 20 years. But, you know, every time I see it, I like it a little bit better because I'm accepting it for what it is, not for what I wanted it to be. And I've been trying to think, like, okay, 7, 8, and 9, then, do I hate it because it's not what I wanted it to be? Kind of like we were discussing with WandaVision earlier. I put so much pressure on what I thought it should be, and then when it's something else, and I just don't see that, because all I wanted it to be was a good Star Wars story. I've already taken these lessons from, like, the prequels of, I need to be open-minded. This is a different story. This is for another generation. This is not mine. But please just give me a new trilogy and entertain me.
Yep.
And see where it goes. And it didn't do that.
Yep. But that being said, there was one thing I wanted to mention. With the prequels... I really like Episode 3. I really think that's when George Lucas hit his stride. And unfortunately, it was too late. And I was really hoping, fingers crossed, that's what Episode 9 was going to be. Like, they were going to hit their stride, and it was going to be, like, amazing. You know, like, maybe Avengers Endgame type of thing. And it was the exact opposite of that. But I remember when I watched Phantom Menace, you know, back in 1999... It took me a few months to process it. At first, I wasn't sure if I liked it or not. And then I came to like it. I think I was just caught up in the nostalgia, the hype, and everything. And then it was actually not a couple few months. It was probably a couple years. And then I was like, you know, I actually don't think that was a good movie. Like, there was parts of it I liked. But overall, it was kind of shitty. Whereas, like, Episode 8, it was, instead of a couple years, it was like a couple months. Like, at the time, I thought Rian Johnson, I thought it was a brilliant move that Rian Johnson was doing something different. You know, like, I kind of liked that my expectations were not met. But then the more I thought about it, I was like, no, like, that was bad. You know, like, this is the mid, you know, like, when I think of episode 8, I think in terms of The Empire Strikes Back, you know, which is my favorite of the original trilogy. It should have been that. It should have been like, oh my God, what's going to happen next?
It should have been more cliffhanger.
Yes. And, I mean, same with the Attack of the Clones. It was kind of a cliffhanger. It did end with the Clone Wars beginning. But I wanted more. I wanted, you know, like, because now it's continuity that Palpatine is actually Anakin's father. Like, he didn't have sex with Anakin's mom, but he used the Force to impregnate her. You know, like, that's something that was brought up in the comic books, I guess. I wanted that revelation in Attack of the Clones. But, you know, like, if Palpatine had revealed to Dooku or something that Anakin was his son, you know, like, Anakin wouldn't have known, but for us it would have been like, oh my God, like, that's amazing. Like, because, you know, like next time you watch Return of the Jedi, you're going to look at it in a different way, because that's grandpa, son, and grandson, you know?
Yeah.
Like... And I guess I guess now it is, but I don't know. I'm not a big fan of revelations in comic books or books. I want to see it on film.
For major revelations, yes, like that. Yes,
absolutely.
Mandalorian has plenty of things that, as I'm watching, I'm just like, well, that looks cool. Mm-hmm. That's interesting. And I realize from, you know, other podcasts or articles during the week or whatever, people say, okay, this is a thing from the cartoons, this is a thing from comics, this is a thing from the books,
yep,
this is a callback, something's not canon anymore. Awesome, cool, great Easter eggs. Knowing that is very cool, but I was able to sit and enjoy the entire thing and get everything out of it without knowing all of those. There are, yep, nice little Easter eggs for other people that are into it. But there were too many things that felt like for 7, 8, 9, that I'm like, I don't know what's going on. Well, you need to read the 400-page novel. No, I don't.
Yeah.
I should not have to read that to understand what's going on with this character, because most of the people watching this billion-dollar franchise have not also read all the books, too.
Yeah.
It can be an Easter egg, it can be a little wink and a nod, but it should not affect my enjoyment and understanding of the two-hour movie because I didn't read a novel.
Exactly. It's like in, you know, I know we keep pointing out Marvel here, but like Thanos, you know, like, he was introduced in that, you know, mid credit or end credit scene of Avengers, and then we saw him grow a little bit in, you know, the first Guardians movie, and then, you know, then we saw him, and, you know, in Infinity War it established who he was, what he was doing. If you had never read a comic book, you didn't need, you know, like, you learned all you needed to know about Thanos. And in my mind, they actually approved on the character, like, because his motivations in the movie, I think, are far more logical and realistic than the comic book, you know, that he's, you know, trying to court death, you know, like, that's just kind of hokey. Like, in the comic books, it works, but in reality, not so much. I think what they did with him actually works. That being said, like you said, Kev, with WandaVision, you know, like, you can cherry pick certain things and make it work. And I really wish they had done that with the sequel trilogy. Because in my mind, like, I remember back in the early 90s reading Timothy Zahn's Thrawn trilogy, which at the time was going to be the closest thing we got to a sequel trilogy, because George Lucas at that point had no interest in doing a sequel trilogy. And the Thrawn trilogy was amazing. Like, that is what I wanted to see on screen, something like that, and that is not what I got at all.
You're fine. I haven't read Thrawn trilogy. I know, and I might have the books already too, but there's just too much stuff to read, yeah, and watch and everything. But while watching Mandalorian, when Ahsoka says, "Where's Thrawn?" I understood. She's looking for someone.
Yep.
He is a bad guy.
Yep.
She wants to defeat him.
Yep.
Everyone that's read the books got a whole, or the cartoons or whatever, got a whole other level from that. But yep, we both enjoyed it.
Yep.
I did not, my enjoyment did not lessen because I hadn't read the books.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, like the Thrawn trilogy is not considered canon anymore. So it's still the same character. But in Star Wars Rebels, they introduced Thrawn in a different way. He's still a Grand Admiral. And he's still essentially the same character, but what happened to him in the cartoon is very different than what happened to him in the trilogy. But, I mean, Episode 7 came out before Star Wars Rebels. So, I mean, they could have totally used Grand Admiral Thrawn. And I think for what didn't work with the sequel trilogy is they needed a good big bad guy. You know, like they needed, you know, a Grand Moff Tarkin type of character. And I'm sorry, but that... what the hell is that? General Hux? The, you know, blonde... redhead millennial there?
Yeah.
He doesn't cut it. Like, he's not threatening. He's not intimidating. Like, his little Hitler speech in Episode 7, okay. But it would have been better coming from an actor like Charles Dance. You know, like, somebody that's, you know, authoritative. Like, Charles Dance played Tywin Lannister on Game of Thrones.
Okay.
Like, he's the type of guy, walks into a room, he commands respect just by, you know, his presence, the way he walks, the way he holds himself. And that's the type of character that Grand Admiral Thrawn is. And that was really missing. And they really needed someone like that. So anyway, let's get into how we would have done the trilogy differently. So Kevin, if you could remake the remake the sequels, how would you do it? Like, what are some of your ideas?
All right. So it's one kind of all-encompassing idea here.
Okay.
And it should have been one voice from the beginning for it.
Which is what they should have done in the first place. Yeah.
Yeah. So I want it to be more about fate and then rebelling against that fate.
Okay.
So I want Rey to think she doesn't matter and she's fated for nothing. I want Kylo Ren to think that he's fated to be the next evil ruler of the Empire. I want Finn to really start to worry about his fate as a stormtrooper and really be more conflicted with it and all, because he just jumps right into it.
Yeah.
I would like more conflict, more debate. He and Poe, I want Poe to debate, like, is this all worth it? This adventure, this, you know, stuff always goes wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Like, not wanting to have to make tough decisions or to have to be put in these spots all the time. And even, I can't remember the character's name right now. What's Kelly Marie Tran?
I can't remember.
Rose.
Yes, Rose. No, I was going to say Rose Tyler, but that's Doctor Who.
No, Rose Tycho, I think.
Yes, I think so.
Okay. Luke not wanting to see evil anymore because of Kylo and just walking off. Anything I do is fated to go wrong, so I just won't do anything anymore. And I want people, as their characters progress, to not decide I'm going to be good for most of these.
Mm-hmm.
But to start saying, you know, it's not all light and dark. There's in between for a lot of these decisions, too. I would want Kylo to be doing things and feel conflicted, like, well, I kind of helped Rey out here, but we're on opposite sides. Why would I do that? I want Rey to feel she went too far on something. Well, I'm supposed to be a good guy. That's not what we do here.
Mm-hmm.
I want Luke to be conflicted. I sense great power and light, but also great darkness in Rey. I'm not quite sure what's going to happen here. Finn, honestly, should be more hey, everything I've been taught all my life is that you, Poe, are the enemy, but we're kind of stuck together. And Poe, like, I've been taught my whole life you're my enemy too, but we're kind of stuck together here. What are we going to do? There should have been more conflict.
Yeah.
And what really got me for it was in 8, when they're discussing, like, where do you think the weapons come from? Someone supplying both sides. Like, yeah, there is an in-between here. There is a part that's like, we're not all good, we're not all bad. So I would want that moving forward here. So when we get to 9, all those people that they find on Endor, or on Endor, yeah, because the moon blew up. I don't know. You know what I mean.
Yep.
Either the moon or the planet there. should go to Finn and say, hey, you became legend there. You were the only stormtrooper to go and do something else, to have your own thought. So we left too. And he's like, well, I'm not a role model. I doubt myself too. I'm not sure. And they would say, yes, but you have that option. Even having doubt is something we didn't have beforehand. Even being able to question what we're supposed to do is something we didn't have beforehand. We're not asking you to be perfect, but you inspired us to try to make our own decisions, to make our own thoughts, and we decided this is the side we want to be on, and these are the actions we want to do here. So it's not completely, you know, 100% like a Gandalf the White coming in here, mm-hmm. you know, as a god.
Yep.
It's doubt. And at the end, I would tie it all in together instead of, who are you, Rey? What's your name? Rey Skywalker. Which was hokey, but I understood it and all.
Yeah.
What's your name, Rey? Say that again. Gray. Put like a G-Rey there. Gray. Yeah. I am neither the dark nor the light. I am in between. As we all are.
Yeah.
And just have that be the symbol of all three movies. All of us have light and darkness within us, and it depends on the moment. And as long as we overall can be good people, moving stuff beforehand, we can have our dark moments. We can have our doubt. We can have our questions. Fear leads to hate. Hate leads to suffering. You know, okay, mm-hmm. but maybe it's all right to have some fear. Maybe it's all right to say, hey, I hate Darth Vader, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe we can move that stuff forward there and have a little doubt and have the whole reason that Rey is the strongest, is this, you know, peak Jedi, despite having no training, is because she was willing to take both sides of the Force into one. I am more powerful with them both together. I am the yin and the yang. And because I'm the only one willing to take both sides is why I am better than these two sides separate.
Interesting. Excellent. So that you said, that would be 7 through 9.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. And I think most of the stuff could still stay.
Yep.
Even with our, you know, let's switch riders. You know, mid race.
Yeah. All right. Well, for me, like, I had mentioned the Thrawn trilogy. Like I said, I'm a huge fan of the Thrawn trilogy. And, I mean, some things came out of that, as like, from the Thrawn trilogy. So a little background on there. It was actually George Lucas that tapped Timothy Zahn to write a sequel trilogy, and from, you know, I don't know for sure. I'd love to meet Timothy Zahn and ask him. I think George Lucas basically gave him like a premise, like what he would have wanted to do with the sequels, and so that became the Thrawn trilogy. So out of that Thrawn trilogy, some of it actually became canon, like you mentioned, Kev, like Grand Admiral Thrawn is mentioned in The Mandalorian, and we will be seeing him in some capacity going forward. Also the home planet of the Republic is named Coruscant. That actually came out of the Thrawn trilogy. That, like, there wasn't a name for the capital planet of the Empire / Republic until the Thrawn trilogy. So Timothy Zahn actually created the name Coruscant, and also Palpatine. That he was a senator. The Emperor had no name in the original trilogy. He was just simply referred to as the Emperor, and that's all George Lucas ever had for him. It was actually Timothy Zahn that came up with the name Palpatine as the Emperor's name. So, that being said, I'm using some elements from the Thrawn trilogy as well as what we saw what actually happened. So, and I did kind of break it down from different episodes. So, basically, these are just like, you know, the main points. Like, there would definitely be more to these movies, but these are like the main strokes. So, yeah, episode 7. The Thrawn trilogy, I want to point out, takes place 5 years after Return of the Jedi. So some of the elements would have to be changed. Instead of 5 years, now it's 30 years after Return of the Jedi. Okay. So the Empire, under the leadership of Supreme Leader Snoke, has been reduced to controlling only 6 sectors of territory and losing more to the New Republic. So Snoke is basically the same character, but I would throw a little bit of background. He's a Force user. He's not a Sith nor a Jedi, as they established, but he is powerful with the Force, and he was who Palpatine basically left in his will to take over the Empire should something happen to him and Darth Vader. So he steps up, takes over. And then, because Grand Admiral Thrawn, in the original Thrawn trilogy, the way it was written, if I remember correctly, there is actually 12 Grand Admirals in the Empire, but Thrawn was the 13th Grand Admiral. So he wasn't actually in the command structure of the Empire itself. He was sent off into the unknown regions with a task force, basically under orders from Palpatine to basically bring, to go to the unknown regions and basically bring it under Empire rule. So when the Emperor dies, Thrawn comes back and takes over the military of the Empire in the Thrawn trilogy. So now, 30 years later, Grand Admiral Thrawn arrives once again with a fleet of Star Destroyers and a small Death Star. So this Death Star is, like I said, smaller than the other two. And something from the Thrawn trilogy that I thought was really cool is some time ago, Thrawn discovered an alien, almost like an alien lizard race on a planet that could repel the Force. Because on this planet, there's these lizards that they're called Yasmirs that can repel the Force, because the main predator on this planet uses the Force to hunt. So these lizards have developed a way to repel the Force, which I thought was really a cool idea. Because, I mean, in nature, in on Earth, you know, certain races develop certain characteristics to, you know, based on the predators that they're trying to evade, right? So the Yasmir, because they're, I can't remember what the predators were called, but they were an animal race that just naturally used the Force for hunting. The Yasmir developed a way to repel the Force. So Thrawn would take these Yasmirs and basically put them on backpacks. So if anyone tried using the Force on them, it would be repelled. So like Force lightning, if someone shot Force lightning at Thrawn, it would be repelled. Because Grand Admiral Thrawn he's not Force sensitive or anything. He's just a blue skinned, red eyed alien. And one of the unique things about Thrawn is the fact that he's this tactician. Like the Emperor saw something in him. That he was this brilliant, had this brilliant tactical mind, and gave him brought him into the Empire, and he rose through the ranks quite quickly to rise to the rank of Grand Admiral. But like I said, he's the 13th Grand Admiral, and he is assigned to the unknown regions of space. So he's actually kept off the official record book. So like when the Republic, they arrested all the other Grand Admirals, they eventually found them, arrested them, you know, charged them for war crimes, all that kind of stuff. They didn't know about Thrawn because the Emperor basically erased him from all official records. So nobody knew that this guy was out there when he showed up. So I thought that was pretty cool. So 30 years later, he shows up, and he's got these Yasmirs. And also, there's a group of people that have... They're called Nograi, and they're a race of aliens that are very... they're almost like predators themselves. Like, they work in the shadows. They're very sneaky. They can, you know... climb on ceilings. They can, you know, they're basically used as assassins within the Empire. And he has a Nogri bodyguard called Ruk. So when they show up, Thrawn shows up with, and Snoke tries, he meets with Snoke, and of course Snoke wants to kill him because he sees him as a threat, and not knowing that Thrawn has things that can repel the Force doesn't work, and Ruk kills Snoke. And Kylo Ren is still as an apprentice of Snoke, so Thrawn makes a deal with Kylo Ren. You help me with, you know, we'll rebuild this Empire, and, you know, I'll, you know, make you, you know, my second in command, the most powerful man or whatever. So anyway, meanwhile, while all this is going on, a Force ghost, using air quotes, of Palpatine's voice speaks to Kylo Ren. Like, Palpatine is, like, Kylo hears him. And in Episode 7, Rey and Finn's stories are pretty much the same, except when that part when they find the Millennium Falcon, it's actually Luke Skywalker that's on the Millennium Falcon, and he's with Chewie and Han, and they're there to rescue them, because, and at the beginning of the movie, like, we see Leia is, like, they're on Coruscant, right? Coruscant. That's one thing I drove me nuts about the sequels. We didn't see Coruscant. So they're on Coruscant because that's where the New Republic is based out of. Leia's the head of the Senate, or one of the heads of Senate. She could be the Chancellor. Han and Chewie are still there. You know, maybe he's still not married to Leia. Maybe they, you know, they broke up after Kylo turned to the dark side. But one thing I really hated from Episode 7 was the thought that Han would just run away. And
yeah.
I didn't like that. So Han's still there, even though they're not together. And he still has the Falcon, because that's another thing that drove me nuts, is Han would never lose the Falcon. So anyway, the movie begins with obviously begins with a Star Destroyer showing up and all that, and the reveal of Grand Admiral Thrawn. But then the first scene we see of Luke and all them is Luke senses he's got to go to Jakku. There's someone strong with the Force. He needs to go there. So, you know, he taps Han and Chewie, and they're going to Jakku to find this Force person. So they rescue Rey and Finn, bring them back to Coruscant. Luke is rebuilding his Jedi Order following Kylo's betrayal, and he didn't go into hiding. Like, Luke, you know, like, it's unfortunate that Kylo betrayed them. He didn't foresee it coming. But, like, as Yoda said in Phantom Menace, hard to see the dark side is. So, you know, he's still has students there, and Leia sees Rey, you know, when they get back, and Leia warns him, you know, like, she's too old. You know, basically it's like the Anakin thing, like, she's too old, you can't train her. And Luke's like, you know, don't worry about it, you know, I'm not going to make the same mistake I made with Ben. And then that's the reveal that Kylo Ren is Ben Solo. So, this, towards the end of the movie, the smaller Death Star is on its way to Coruscant. Thrawn is not on the Death Star, but he is commanding it. He's, you know, remotely. Like, we think he's on the Death Star, but he actually isn't on the Death Star. That's going to be the surprise. So, you know, they're moving it to Coruscant. So the New Republic, you know, gathers up all their ships, you know, all these fleets show up to Coruscant to defend them against what's left of the Empire. The Death Star shows up. It starts, you know, destroying this fleet. You know, they got, you know, again, the plans for this Death Star were leaked. So they have a way of destroying it. They're going to destroy it. And unfortunately, before they can destroy it, the Death Star uses its immense blast and power on Coruscant, but not to destroy it. But it actually creates a force field around the planet. Hmm. And then these fleets, because they're battling the small Death Star to try and destroy it, and this is when it's revealed that Thrawn is not on the Star Destroyer, or on the Death Star. He's actually on one of the Star Destroyers. He hits a button, the Death Star blows up, and takes out most of the New Republic fleet. So now, Thrawn has captured the heart of the New Republic. Nobody can leave Coruscant because the force field will destroy any ship that tries to leave the planet, and it'll destroy any ship that tries to get into a planet. There's only a couple of kind of like on the movie Rogue One, you know, where there's just that little area where ships can pass through. That's what he's set up. So basically, Coruscant is now being held hostage. And the New Republic fleet has been crippled. So now Thrawn is moving the Empire's fleet out to start retaking some of the systems that have fallen to the New Republic. In this movie, Kylo still kills Han Solo, because that still leads to his embracing the dark side, pushing to the dark side. And then at the end of the movie, it's revealed that, because we assumed, kind of like the X-Men reveal. When you watch that original X-Men from 2000, you think that Magneto is after Wolverine, but he's not. He's actually there for Rogue. So when Luke went to Jakku, everyone assumed he was there for Rey, but he wasn't. He was there for Finn. Finn was the one he sensed. So both Rey and Finn have Force powers, but it was just the Force bringing them together and pushing them towards Luke. But it was actually Finn, because he could sense his conflict as a stormtrooper, like he hated what he was doing. He sensed the conflict within him, that's how he was drawn there. So that's the big revelation at the end of this movie. So episode 8... Luke is trapped on Coruscant. So he was actually there on Coruscant when the field went up. So now he's beginning to organize a resistance against the Empire's rule on the planet. In the books, Leia went to the Nagri homeworld. Those are the assassins that work for the Empire. So in this movie, Leia, Rey, and Chewie... Because in the original Thrawn trilogy, it was just Leia and Chewie that went to Nagri. But now we got Rey, so she's going to go with them to Nagri, where it's revealed that the Empire has been lying to them the whole time, and that we get confirmation that Leia is the daughter of Darth Vader. The Nagri refer to her as Lady Vader, and we get to see Leia train Rey in the ways of the Force, because now she's cut off from Luke. Poe goes to an old Jedi temple on Luke's direction to find other Jedi to help him fight the Empire, but Kylo Ren is on his trail. So in the movie, the original episode 7, Finn is hurt from his battle with Kylo Ren. And in the movie, like episode 7, like Kylo cuts into Finn's spine. And that was kind of like just kind of brushed off in episode 8. But Finn, because of his spinal injury, he gets a Vader-like refit because of what Kylo did to him. So he's actually sitting out most of episode 8. But he does get like a Vader-like type of, you know, makeover, sort of, without the helmet. But basically, he kind of like, what's it, War Machine from Marvel movies. Like, he needs that suit in order to move around.
Now. To walk. Okay. Yeah.
Lando with Ackbar leading the fight against Thrawn and his Empire's fleet. Luke, leading ragtag group of fighters, brings down the force shield surrounding Coruscant, but Luke's TIE fighter is destroyed. Luke and R2 are dead, but heroes. So that's, again, episode 8, Luke died, but in this movie, my remake, he also dies. But he goes out a hero. I mean, he went out a hero in the other one, but I think it was better that, you know, he went out, you know, bringing down the shield. And unfortunately, R2 also passes away. Episode 9. Oh! The big reveal, the big cliffhanger for episode 8 is Kylo goes to, you know, because Poe was trying to recruit Jedi, or bring Jedi back. And so Kylo is trying to stop him. But at one of these temples, he actually consents the dark side. And it's revealed that Palpatine is alive. And he's not a Force ghost. He's alive. So that's a big cliffhanger for episode 8. Episode 9. So Palpatine is a clone of the original Palpatine. He had cloning technology, so it was always his backup plan if he died that he, you know, they would clone him, or, you know, his loyalists would clone him and he would come back. So, he comes back, but like, you know, like the episode, the original, or the episode 9 that we got, he has a fleet of Star Destroyers that have planet-destroying capabilities. His intentions are to basically destroy any planet that doesn't submit to him. Like, he wants to commit mass genocide, essentially. Which kind of goes against what Thrawn is all about. Because Thrawn doesn't know that is what Palpatine is ultimately going to do. To basically bring order to the galaxy is basically pluck out the, you know, the bad weeds or whatever that he sees. Thrawn doesn't believe that. Like, Thrawn, he believes in the Empire, but there's ways of controlling people, there's ways of bringing order without killing innocent people. Like, Thrawn is not, like, it's one thing for Thrawn to destroy the New Republic fleet because he sees them as traitors. Because you got to remember, like, from Thrawn's perspective, Palpatine was the legitimate emperor of the galaxy. Like, you know, and he was given his powers by the Senate. You know, he reorganized the Old Republic into the Empire, which was within his privy to do. And the Empire was the legitimate ruling government of the galaxy. So when he sees the New Republic, he still sees them as rebels. And that's one of the brilliant things with Timothy Zahn's Thrawn trilogy, is he never calls them the New Republic. He always refers to them as rebels. So, but now he's conflicted. He's like, well, this isn't the Empire that I serve. We don't kill innocent people just for the sake of killing them. You know, it's one thing to kill, you know, rebels, but it's another thing to kill innocent people that haven't done anything. So he actually, in this movie, because Thrawn is kicking some serious ass, because that's the thing, Thrawn is really smart. And Ackbar and Lando, they cannot get enough people to get behind them. People, you know, people are falling in line with the Empire. But when Palpatine reveals what he's going to do, Thrawn says, nope, I can't do this. So he turns against the Emperor and actually forms an alliance with Lando and Ackbar to set aside their differences to stop this, you know, what the Emperor is going to do. Luke and Rey, as a Force ghost, Luke and Rey manage to reach Kylo and his master. So Rey and Finn's there too. Rey, Finn basically battle Kylo because he's turned fully to the dark side. And they're able to take him out. And then they battle Palpatine. And then ultimately Finn does sacrifice himself to kill Palpatine. Because the Emperor basically represents everything that Finn doesn't want to be. He hates the Empire. He hates the things he did as a stormtrooper. And he takes out Palpatine. Lando, Leia, and Ackbar with Thrawn's loyal fleet take down Palpatine's Star Destroyers. And then Rey basically takes over Luke's academy and continues training new Jedi. And that's pretty much it.
I like villains that are villains to a point.
Yeah.
Like, there's a difference between being a bad guy and I have my agenda, you know, wealth, power, fame, whatever the purposes are.
Yeah.
But you're a madman.
Yep.
And I can't line up with that. So while I hate, you know, the rebels, the good guys, the whatever in the story here, at least they play by a certain set of rules that I can take advantage of, you know, so I win. But you're crazy.
Yeah.
And I can't go too far with that. I like that with stuff. And I think that audiences appreciate it too, because you fall in love with villains and want a reason to love them in a way.
Yep. Well,
you know,
and I should add, like I said, there's elements of the Thrawn trilogy that are incorporated. At the end of the Thrawn trilogy, Thrawn gets killed. Because, like I said, the Naugri are basically a race that was in, that they have all these like cat-like reflexes and abilities, and the Emperor basically enslaved them, but made them think that he was helping them. Like, he actually poisoned their homeworld. So then, and then he came in with the Empire and using air quotes, saved them. And they didn't realize that the Empire had done that. So they were indebted to them. And so Leia, in the second book, reveals to them that, no, like, the Empire are the ones that, you know, poisoned your world. They did that so they could, you know, enslave you without actually enslaving you. So anyway, word gets to Ruck, Thrawn's bodyguard, and then he ends up stabbing him in the chest. And then Thrawn dies in his command chair. so I would, he would actually die. Like Ruck would still find out that, you know, he's been lied to his whole life. He would still kill Thrawn. And then at the end of the movie, you would see, like, not the destruction of the Empire, but you would see the Empire and the New Republic actually make peace. So there's still sections of the galaxy that are controlled by the Empire. Like, because there are star systems that are loyal to the Empire that don't want to be part of the New Republic. And they stay there. And anyone who wants to join the Empire can join the Empire. Anyone who wants to be part of the New Republic can be part of the New Republic. Which is essentially what happened at the end of Timothy Zahn's Hand of Thrawn two-part book series. Which takes place, I want to say, like 15 years after Return of the Jedi, where the Empire, where the New Republic actually makes peace with the Empire. So it's actually Grand Admiral Thrawn's second in command, Admiral Pellion, who now runs the Empire, that makes peace with the New Republic. So like that, you would see Admiral Pellion taking control of the Empire and making peace with the Republic. Because I really don't think destroying one group over the other you know, is necessary. You know, like they're willing to work things out. So let them work it out. Like, it ends in a peaceful way. So in that way, you could still have the Empire for future movies. It's just they wouldn't be, like, you know, all evil Empire. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It would be an interesting dynamic, I think. But anyway, that I just I forgot to mention that.
I mean, you got me wanting to read the Thrawn trilogy more so than anything else has done in the last, what, 20 years or so?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Like I said, there's actually 5 books. There's the Thrawn trilogy, and then there's a 2-part Hand of Thrawn. And they are good, too. I'm sorry I spoiled the death of Thrawn to you. I shouldn't have done that. But, I mean, it's not continuity now, so...
Yeah.
But I will say, in the Hand of Thrawn trilogy, he comes back in a very interesting way. Way more interesting than how they brought Palpatine back. Like, it was neat how they did it.
Well, and also interesting thing you're doing there is taking the Death Star idea and not just, okay, we have a bigger Death Star, and now we have a whole Death Planet. And now, and just, you know, just taking the same idea and making it bigger, you're taking the idea and going a different direction with it too, which me watching it be like, okay, I think I know where this is going. And then that version of the weapon would completely surprise me. Be like, well, that's something new. I thought I knew where this was going and you tricked me here. This is a good concept.
Well, and that's the beauty thing about Thrawn is he would think like that, right? Like, he would be like, well, of course they're going to send all their fleets to this Death Star because they know what Death Stars have done in the past. And this is the capital planet. They're not going to want to see it destroyed. So they're going to send everything at it. So we're going to use it to blow. We're going to use that to our advantage by using it to blow them up.
Yeah.
Like, that is like Thrawn's tactical thinking. Like, Thrawn has no problem sacrificing, you know, like, cause I mean, it's a powerful weapon to just, you know, use only once and then never use it again. But he's willing to make that sacrifice because he knows if he can cripple those fleets, you know, his fleets are going to be able to, you know, move in on certain sectors and be able to take things back that they lost. But anyway,
you know, no, but just like Star Wars is always the, you know, it's the space western overall.
Yep.
But you with Thrawn there and everything just now, like, has anyone really done it as space military? Because that is a big part of it. Like, do it like, you know, one of the great things about Captain America Winter Soldier is it's a spy movie that has superheroes in it.
Yep.
But it's a spy movie first. But to do a Star Wars that's a military movie first, just happens to be in space, would be a real interesting take on it.
Oh, yeah. And that's what I loved about the Thrawn trilogy, is because, like, Grand Admiral Thrawn thinks that way. Like, his big thing is he, like, if you go into his quarters or whatever, his ready room or whatever they call it, he has replicas of, like alien art from, like, a bunch of different planets. And that's how he learns about the way they think, is from their art. So, like, he's able
actually makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, so he, like, for Admiral Akbar, for example, he's able to outthink Akbar because he studied their art, the Mon Calamari art and their way of thinking. It comes through in their art. So, like, that's how he's able to kind of stay ahead of Akbar in a lot of respect. And, like, I can't say enough good things about the Thrawn trilogy, because the original, like what I love, like, when we were talking about G.I. Joe earlier, one of the things I love about G.I. Joe is the villains. Like, I almost like the villains more than the heroes. And that's what I loved about the original trilogy, is I loved the Empire. Like, I know Grand Moff Tarkin was a bad guy, but he was interesting to watch. He had that commanding presence. Darth Vader, you know, like, he was a badass, you know, like, he's choking out subordinates left, right, and center that, you know, piss him off. And it's like, wow, like that, like it's interesting. And each movie begins with a Star Destroyer. You see the Star Destroyer coming across. The Thrawn trilogy, every book begins with a Star Destroyer.
Oh, all right.
You know, like, it always begins with Grand Admiral Thrawn. Like, that's the first chapter. You know, the Star Destroyer, you know, coming through this, you know, orbiting a planet. And it's like, yeah, he totally nailed the feel of the original trilogy. But, yeah, it's... Yeah. And there's so many cool elements that they could have... Like, they should have just adapted those books. Like, honestly, like, I mean, like, but I mean, like, for my remake here, like, I kept some of the good things I liked about the sequel trilogy. Like, I loved Finn in episode 7. Like, I liked that idea of this conflicted stormtrooper and him switching sides. And, you know, and I really thought, you know, like, when he fights Kylo Ren with that lightsaber, like, it was, I thought that was amazing. Like, it was cool seeing Rey, you know, grab the lightsaber and, you know, it flies to her hand, and that was cool. But at the time, we didn't know, and we still don't know, because, you know, in episode 9, Finn was going to tell Rey something, and we didn't find out what he was going to say. But apparently, he was going to tell him that he's force sensitive. But for some reason, they kept that from us. I don't know why. So that's why I like that bait and switch where you think that, you know, Luke is there for Rey, but he's actually was there for Finn all along.
Yeah.
And like I said, like, that was one of the coolest things about the episode 7 that we got, was seeing Finn just pick up that lightsaber and just say, fuck it. You know, like, when he first he used that to fight that stormtrooper, and then when he fought Kylo Ren, I was like, holy shit. Like, there's no way this is going to end good for him, but he doesn't care. Like, that's a hero. You know, like, that, you know, the odds are stacked against him. And he's like, you know, I'm doing this. And that's, you know, some of the things that they did in the sequels, I would keep. And Finn is definitely one of those, like, from episode 8, I hate that they made him a joke. And then basically episode 9, he was just like a extra, you know, like, he was a background character.
Yeah. There's a few things that the older I get and the more I want to, you know, explore my own writing and stuff, that I want to take some of these stories and file the serial numbers off and tell it my way.
Yep.
This trilogy is one of them.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Yeah. You know, change just enough to not be sued.
Yeah. Yeah, pull a Rob Liefeld. Just repurpose everything. And, oh, this is, what did he call it?
Fighting American.
Well, no, Fighting American is an actual character, but he changed his Captain America, like, the stuff he was doing for Marvel. And then he got sued by them. But he ended up getting the rights to Fighting American.
Oh, that's right. He was going to do... Yeah, you're right. I forget what he called the character at first, and then he got sued, so then he bought the rights to Fighting American instead.
Yeah, it was something silly like Commander USA or something. Like, it was,
yeah.
And basically, he just wanted to use the stuff he already did for Captain America and repurpose it. But Rob... he is a character.
Did you see the side tangent? He's been doing a Snake Eyes series, and the last issue it says, hey, I had so many people that wanted to be a part of the series, they all wanted to come on board to ink. So I'm not inking this issue, or my regular inker isn't doing it. Every page is going to have a new inker as an all-star jam. No, it's because he was so far behind. They gave everyone a page to try to get the book out as fast as they could.
That's funny. That's hilarious.
Oh, Rob.
Yeah. But anyway, I guess that's it for us, for our remake of the sequel trilogy. And yeah, so we will be doing a supplemental episode for Ragnar, because unfortunately he couldn't make it this evening. but he was really psyched about this topic. So we're going to do a supplemental episode in the not-too-distant future where Ragnar's going to share his what he would have done for a sequel trilogy. But before we go, let's play that little game of where can we find you on the internet. And Kevin, where can we find you, sir?
All right, you can find my main site over at masslibrary.com, and I usually have a series of articles or reviews or whatever I'm doing. In addition to this podcast, you can hear my voice over on the House Show podcast that's hosted by the Retro Network. And you can find me on most social medias at Mass the Library.
So are you guys coming up with a plan? Like, if you can't continue with the Saturday shows?
We do. Okay. There's a retro wrestling product on one of the other streaming services that we think would be a fun little thing. So we're thinking of doing that for however many weeks and then going back to Saturday Night's Main Event and finish it up.
Excellent. So side tangent here, on the WWE Network, do they have Maple Leaf Wrestling on there?
Not yet.
No?
They're buying out stuff constantly.
Okay, do they have no Stampede Wrestling?
There's a little bit of Stampede.
Oh, okay.
And then do they have, or someone has, they tried to reboot Stampede a few years ago?
I think so, yeah.
And someone has that.
Because a lot of people actually came through Stampede, like...
a ton of people.
Like, I know, you know, aside from the Hearts, obviously, and Chris Benoit and stuff, Andre the Giant was in Stampede, Jake the Snake. He actually did an interview, Jake the Snake, a year or two ago with Joe Rogan, when he was talking about Andre. And I didn't realize, like, Jake the Snake, he actually used to drive the wrestlers to and from shows for Stampede. And yeah, the one story he shared about Andre, like buying him like a 48, like a flat of beer for whatever it was, like an hour, 2 hour drive to a show. And by the time they got there, it would be completely gone.
Don't doubt it.
But I mean, like, have you ever seen that picture of Andre holding a beer can?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
It's disturbing.
Yeah. It looks like when I hold one of them like the mini cans.
Yeah.
I now every time I hold one of the mini cans, I think like I'm this is what Andre must have felt like drinking those beers. You know.
I just looked it up too. The Stampede reboot is on WWE Network. It's just one episode. They did a pilot for it, and then they have random Stampede clips, but not full episodes. Andre though, the Saturday Night's Main Event we're watching, we're in the build-up for and fallout of WrestleMania 3, Hogan versus Andre. So there's a battle royal where Andre throws Hogan out and just shakes his hands in disgust at him, like, be gone with you, and it is one of the most intimidating things you've ever seen in your life. It's so scary to see it.
Yeah.
And then he has another match, King Kong Bundy's in the ring against Paul Orndorff. Andre and Bundy are both managed by Bobby Brain Heenan at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Andre just reaches his hand into the ring and is able to grab Orndorff and pull him back to a corner from the floor. I was like, I'm just watching it stunned. Like, the reach of that man and the power, unreal.
Honestly, it's like, it for us, it would be like grabbing a little kid.
Oh, you know? It absolutely looks like that, yeah. It's so disturbing, yeah. But impressive.
Yeah, it is. It is. Yeah, and that being said, we have to do another wrestling episode. We haven't, like, usually we don't do one every year. So, yeah, I'm going to throw that on the schedule. We got to talk some wrestling.
Because right.
I've been enjoying this. As for myself, you can check out my blogs at randomnerdist.blogspot.com. Every once in a while, I throw a blog on there. I haven't done one this month yet, but... we'll see. Sometimes I get that writing bug, and I write a bunch, and then I take a break. go over to Ragnar's website, Ragnar the Trader, and he's got lots of drinking horns, lots of Viking stuff. It's really cool. Be sure to check that out. All right. Well, on behalf of Kevin and myself, I want to thank you, dear listener, for taking the time to listen to the Pop Culture Pub Podcast. This was our Let's Remake the Sequels podcast. and we will see you again in the not too distant future.